Today's podcast, Light Waves, a deep dive into lighting and design, we have a very special guest. We have Jan Lennox-Moyer on. Jan is a member of IALD. She's internationally known lighting designer and has received many design awards. She's judged many competitions. She's taught all over the world, and she was a teaching assistant for undergraduate lighting at MSU. She taught landscape lighting at UC Berkeley and Rutgers University in the Landscape Continuing Education Department during the 1980s and 90s. Jan practiced interior design, commercial and residential lighting. Her emphasis shifted to landscape lighting in 1983. Her projects include landscape lighting of Levi Plaza, the Detroit Civic Center, Skywalker Ranch, the Palace in Abu Dhabi, interior landscape lighting at Farniente Winery in Napa, a resort in Safagada, Egypt, Chicago Botanical Gardens, Olbrich Botanical Gardens. It goes on and on. Jan is the author of two books, the acclaimed landscape lighting book, which was originally published in 1992. It's now in its third edition with expanded information and documentation, Garden Evolution, extensive drawing appendix, and How Disruptive LED Changed Landscape Lighting and How to Plan for the Future. Jan has a new book out, which is this book, The Art of Landscape Lighting. It was released in April of 2022 with over 800 color photo drawings, explanations of thinking and planning, and how to respond to project needs and challenges covering 45 years of design. In 2010, Jan founded the International Landscape Lighting Institute. It's an educational public charity. ILLI teams have designed and installed 5 permanent landscape lighting exhibitions in the USA and Tokamachi, Japan. I want to ask her about that. Jan is committed to sharing her knowledge and striving to raise the bar for the landscape lighting industry, which she has done and I'm sure will continue to do. Welcome, Jan. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much to both of you, Shelley and Melissa, for having me.
We're very excited. So I want to dive right into your books. Your two books, the first one in 1992 with the 3 editions and the new book in 2022, 20 mm-hmm. years apart. It seems like a continuation of one long process. And mm-hmm. I want to know your process of how you started the first book and how it led all the way to the second book in 2022. The first book is really pretty technical. It's technical knowledge. The second book is a beautiful 800 pages of your projects. So how did that start? How did that happen? And how did you come to write both books?
I didn't want to write a book. But there was this little voice in the back of my head in the 1980s saying, Jan, you've learned all this stuff and there are no resources. You have to share this information. And I said to the little voice, go away. And the little voice didn't go away. So I made an agreement with the little voice. I would do a proposal. And my mentor, Fran Kellogg-Smith, had finished publishing a book recently. So she told me how to do a request to a publisher for consideration of a book. And I told the little voice, I'll do this. And if any of the publishers want the book, then I'll do the book. So the application was 150 pages because they ask for so much stuff that, you know, you don't know about. So unfortunately for me, both publishers wanted the book. So the little one. And I essentially wrote the book, the first book, the landscape lighting book, primarily because of materials, finish, and corrosion, which is chapter 8 in the 3rd edition. I was teaching at UC Berkeley at the time, and so I was fortunate enough that I could go to any library at the university, and I spent 6 months in the chemistry library. I learned so much. And essentially all the manufacturers back at that time, at least, I don't know about today, used my book to help them understand what we need to think about to make sure that fixtures last. We're asking our clients to spend a lot of money. when we do landscape lighting, and the fixtures should last. And so many, many changes have occurred because of that chapter in my book. I wanted that book essentially to be a guide that helped people understand everything that happens in landscape lighting, both us practicing practicing people and all the people out there that just want to have landscape lighting. So I was trying to thread a line between it being a professional reference and a book that was just available to everyone. So I started with conceptual design and meeting your client and how do you interview your client. Interviewing your client is so critical. And it goes all the way through all the steps of what we do and how we do it so that we both groups understand what's involved in landscape lighting, because it's way more complicated than other kinds of lighting. We start with a dark night. We don't have a ceiling. We don't have walls. And we've got to reveal things from the darkness and not overwhelm the night at the same time. So over the years, what I've learned is it just doesn't take much. And what I mean by that is it doesn't take much wattage. And one of my guidelines, and I've got a ton of them, is to use more fixtures and less wattage to show the three-dimensional shape, the texturing, the coloring, all the characteristics of whatever element it is that you're lighting. So after that book, well, I've done that book three times now. Wiley requires 25% new information every time you do a new edition, which is a lot. And I always did more than 25%. So the first book I started in 1988, and it was released in, I think it was April of 1992. I'm not positive. I think that's what it was. So it took 4 years. And here's the funny part about it. I would go up to my swimming club every afternoon and swim for an hour. And I did all my planning for what I needed to do now or next for my book while I was swimming. It was amazing how that worked. So that book took 4 years. The second book, which came out in 2005, took 3 years. And the unfortunate part of that book is I had just signed the contract with Wiley to do the second edition. And my life partner, Michael Hooker, died in a month. And Michael and I had talked about when one of us dies, the other one would just pick themselves up and go on. And that didn't happen. I couldn't even stand on my own 2 feet. Luckily, a really wonderful friend of mine, Andy Robbins, literally held me up off the ground for 3 weeks after Michael died. So I had a challenge trying to get it done. And I was teaching at RPI at the time, at the Lighting Research Center. And my students just really kind of stood around me and helped me get through it. It was really wonderful. The third one, which is the final one, I hope, came out primarily due to the changes that we all went through with that disruptive technology of LED. And it's not just that the technology was disruptive. The lighting world was ambushed. I've never said that before, and that's really how I feel. We were ambushed by people from the world of LED, the digital world, the whatever the right way to say that world is. And they didn't understand anything about lighting. And quite frankly, I don't think they do today. And they have done things that have really set us back a long way. One example that I'm dealing with right now is street lighting. I live in a tiny little town in the middle of nowhere, Arizona, called Rio Verde. And our supplier of power, SRP, which is a nonprofit, believe it or not, started within the last 6 months just changing out our fixtures from high pressure sodium. And as we all know, nobody likes high pressure sodium, but we've had high pressure sodium here in Rio Verde for 50 years. And we love our high pressure sodium. It's quiet, it's gentle. This is a very, very quiet neighborhood. When someone has to go to the hospital, and it's an over 55 neighborhood, so people are going to the hospital every day out of this neighborhood, you would never know it. There are no sirens in this neighborhood. It's a very quiet neighborhood. So SRP started changing out our fixtures to LED. They're using a 25 watt lamp. We used 100, I think it was 100 watt high pressure sodium. They're using a 25 watt lamp, and everyone knows, if you know LED, that's just too much. It's just too much. And they've changed us from high pressure sodium color, which is what, 2200 degrees Kelvin, to 3000 degrees LED. And everybody, I use 3000 degrees in my landscape lighting every day. But 3000 degrees, a change from 2200 to 3000 is way too radical. We had a meeting yesterday, the neighborhood team that's doing this, with a professional street lighting specialist in Phoenix. And I have to tell you this because this is just really sweet. He walked into the meeting yesterday and he said, "I want everyone in this room to know that I've been a member of the IES my entire career, and I go to all the IES meetings to hear this woman speak," pointing at me. Isn't that
That's great.
cool?
That's great.
So he said, having checked what he has seen in our neighborhood, he is not convinced that all the fixtures, and all the fixtures is like six or eight. We don't have many, but everybody in our neighborhood is complaining because it's way too much light, it's way too glary, and it's way too cold. And he thinks that it's not all 3,000, that some of it might be as high as 5,000 or even 6,000.
Wow. That's
So, and here's the problem. The high pressure sodium fixture had the lamp regressed. If this is the bottom of the fixture, the lamp was regressed up into an optic that surrounded it. And so when you walk around the neighborhood, you don't see any glare from that high pressure sodium lamp. That's saying a lot. When we walk anywhere in our neighborhood now, we have to go like this because of those six or eight LED fixtures that we now have. So, and that's just scratching the surface of the things that we have lost. It's like everyone in this industry, at least all the manufacturers in the industry, have forgotten all we know about shielding light sources and making the night a beautiful place to exist rather than a place where you have to shield your eyes from the light that we want. I've gone off on a tangent, I'm sorry.
No,
I'm with you there, though.
it's fascinating. It is.
So that was the third edition. One of the things, one just one of the things that I changed was what we need to think about, be prepared to ask questions about, because by the time that book came out, everything that I wrote about LEDs in that book would have been gone. It's changing so fast. When I first started working on the third edition, I met with all of the big players that were producing the chips and producing the packages before I wrote that new chapter or revised that chapter. And the first one that I met with was a very well-known manufacturer with a really well-known person that I was meeting with. We met for 3 hours, and at the end of that, I was just so exhausted. But my last question was, "This is not the first time we've had a new light source. I started in landscape lighting, or I started in lighting before we had the MR16 lamp. So I'm used to changes in lighting. And normally it takes a couple of years for things to settle down. That's what it took with the MR16. It was way new technology too, and we were all just so thrilled having that lamp because we could do things we could never do before. It took a couple of years for that to settle down and for the cost to settle down. When we first got MR16 lamps, they cost $20. And we had two options, a spot and a flood. Or when we stopped using incandescent or halogen MR16 lamps, we could get them for under $5. So what's going to happen with LED as we accept it? We have no choice. We have to accept it. And his answer, this was in 2010, his answer was it's going to take 10 to 20 years for it to settle down. And I don't see that the cost will ever settle down. And I believe that's because of greed, nothing else. But that's just my opinion. So we're now 13 years into it, and it's just changing as fast as ever. I just started looking for replacement lamps for the under cabinet lamps for my kitchen counter lighting in the last couple of days. I changed them all out from incandescent to LED when I moved to my new house here in Rio Verde in 2015. So these lamps have lasted 8 years and they're all starting to fail. And you know how lamps fail. One goes and then another goes, another goes. So that's what's happening in my kitchen right now. The lamp that I got from a company called Meridian, which I had never heard of before at the time, Meridian still exists. That lamp no longer exists. So I had to search for anything that I could use. I have had projects, and I'm sure you guys have had too, where between the time that I spec'd the fixtures and the contractor went to purchase them, they no longer existed. I've had projects where we installed LED fixtures. I'm thinking of one in Northern California in a kitchen, a long recessed strip light above the counter, above the kitchen cabinets, that did just a really beautiful job of giving general lighting for the whole kitchen. And after, I don't remember how many years, a number of years, they failed and the manufacturer no longer produced that product and we were going to have to replace the entire fixture. I hit the ceiling and they searched the whole country and found something that they could use to replace just the guts of the fixture so we didn't have to replace the whole fixture. That is commonplace still today, and we have never had that happen before. When I first joined lighting back in the late 70s, I bought a house in Northern California in the early 80s, and it had a fixture from a company that no longer exists today, but it did back then. The fixture had been put in the house in the 1950s, and they had replacement parts for me for that fixture. Not today, not with LEDs. You can't get replacement anything. And I'm just getting going about the problems with LED. Try to get lamps. I was working on a project in Tulsa, two projects in Tulsa, Oklahoma last fall. And one of them was a really big project. One was kind of a medium-sized project, but we needed hundreds of lamps. And my supplier was out of the lamps, didn't tell me, sent something else. You don't do that. You don't send a replacement lamp without talking to the designer. And I had a week to finish these two projects and the lamps still had not come in. What a disaster. I mean, this just, and we can't blame this on COVID any longer, I don't think. So now that I've railed and railed about all of that, there are really wonderful things that LED brings to landscape lighting. And we'll get to those at some point, but I'm still talking about the third edition of the first book. So the third edition of the first book added a new chapter that I call Garden Evolution. And I call it that because gardens are constantly changing. Unlike interiors, we don't replace the fixtures in our ceilings, hopefully ever. We might change the lamps. We might change what we're doing with them, but we don't typically take them out of the ceiling and put a new fixture in. It's not like an iPhone that we're expected by the manufacturer to change every 6 months. We can't do that in interior lighting. But we do a lot of change all the time in landscape lighting because the gardens are changing all the time. Things change with the season. So right now in the spring, we're all seeing the beautiful flowers and the beautiful fresh new growth on trees and shrubs. And interesting enough, over all the years of teaching, my students and I have done little research projects. And one of the research projects that we did one year was we found that spring foliage is a much lighter color than summer foliage. The foliage color actually changes. The leaves actually change in color from spring to summer and get darker. And I've started calling summer the dark months because of that. So things change from one season to another. Plants grow. They grow some dramatically. Some just keep getting bigger and bigger, but they change. Then plants die. And then people get involved. People like to add new pathways. They like to add new sculptures. They like to change their plants. They'll add whole new gardens. They'll do all kinds of things. So we need to be aware of and prepared for from the beginning all the things that might or could change in garden evolution. Before I wrote that chapter, I experienced three really major Garden Evolution hits on my projects. One of them was a project that I'd worked on for probably 15, 20 years. And then the owner retired. And the owner decided that he wanted to do massive change in his garden. And then he invited me over. I used to go over every year to just see how things are going and what do we need to do. And he invited me over. He hadn't told me anything about this change. We're standing on his back deck looking at his backyard. And I said to him, "Can I have a few minutes?" It was so different. I had to rethink the design right there on the spot from the beginning. That was the first one. The second one was I was working on this very big project in Ohio. And there was this one hillside that separated the main house from the lake so that you couldn't see the lake from the house. It was a very important hillside. And I don't know exactly what happened and what the relationship was like between the owner and the landscape architect. But I went there in the winter of one year, all the trees had been planted. I came back that spring and the shrubs and ground plane, not the ground covers, but the bigger plants that were going to go in had all been placed. So I started flagging all my fixture locations. And then they called me back the following December. And there was nothing there. Most of the trees had been taken out and moved. Luckily, it was a very large project and they weren't destroyed. They were moved to another part of the project. But once again, I had to start over from the beginning. We had power there and we had to completely start over. Hmm. Then the kicker hit me, the big one. This was in Bermuda. And when you're working in a resort or a remote location like Bermuda or many remote locations, you've got to bring all your equipment with you when you go there because you can't get anything locally. So the whole project had been pretty much done except for what did we call it? The water wall. And it had multiple planting pockets and it had waterfalls and it had a slide, water slide that went through it, all kinds of stuff. And I get a call from the electrical contractor. I had laid out everything. I had told them on the drawings where everything went. And he called me up. He said, "Jan, could you come down? I'm really trying hard to figure out what you want me to do. And I want to do it right, but I'm just having trouble." So I asked the client and I go down there with Jessica, who was helping me at that time, knowing that there's probably going to be something that I need help on. And we get there and Jessica and I look at it and it's like, "What is this?" It had no relationship to the drawings, none. And what happened was the landscape architect had been fired and the person that was building the wall just did whatever they wanted. So the poor electrical contractor, there was no way he could have figured out where to put power or what fixtures went where. So Jessica and I started making these big placards. They were huge and they had a number on them. So we said, you know, this is pocket number one. Jessica's up in the pocket. I'm down on the ground by the pool trying to change the drawings. We go from pocket to pocket. We get about halfway across this wall. This wall was huge. It was probably, I don't know, 50 feet long. And from the pool deck up to the house deck, it probably rose somewhere between 15 to 20 feet. So it was massive. We get about halfway across the wall and I said to Jessica, I can't do this, can you? And she said, "I'm lost." So we had to call the client down to help us figure it out. It was that project that taught me never to put light fixtures on a drawing again because of garden evolution. Garden evolution starts from the minute you start planning a garden to the time when the earth gets destroyed by some kind of nuclear blast. It's constant and some of it is bigger and some of it's smaller, but I learned on that project to put notes on my contract documents, the documents that the contractors bid to give the, either the general contractor or the owner whoever's taking the bids, how much it will cost to purchase and install this lighting. So I put a note that says, at each location, and I number all the fixtures and I give names to all the areas. So at each location, provide for up to so many of this type fixture and that type fixture or whatever it is on load such and such, on transformer such and such. So that he's got all the, whoever the contractor is, has all the information that they need to bid the project. And then once plants start arriving, I go out and start flagging, and we start making notes on our pretty empty drawings of what's happening. But we also have the flags. We start doing the drawings though, because sometimes the flags don't last. Things happen in the gardens, like plants get planted or somebody's doing something and a flag gets pulled out. And then essentially the final placements and wattage and aiming and everything that we do during our focusing sessions at night, at the very end, that gets put onto the documents, which are called record documents. And those are the only real documents. And we need those documents for maintenance and all the changes that garden evolution requires over time as the garden goes through 1 year to another to another. So each edition has big changes in it. And when I was done with all of that, I thought, I'm done.
But not really.
But not really, because this book was done by John Wiley & Sons, which is a textbook publisher, and they are very stingy about color plates. So there was always a tiny little section in the middle of the book with color. All the rest of the photographs were black and white. Well, landscape lighting doesn't happen in black and white. And you can't really understand landscape lighting from a photograph to begin with, because the depth of field is just not right. But you get a sense of it. You really need to be in a space to get the sense of it. So I got contacted by an editor from a publisher that I'd never heard of, Routledge, out of London, asking if I would do another book. And I was lucky enough that I had thought I was going to do just a small little book on the effect of winter on landscape lighting, because there's nothing better, in my opinion, than lighting in snow. It's the best. And you can say, then why do you live in Arizona? And that will go without an answer at the moment. But John Wiley & Sons refused to do the book. So they essentially released me to work with other publishers. Because I have a contract. I had a contract with them that said they had the right of refusal, and they refused. So I could do a book with Routledge. And I said to them, if I'm going to do a book with you, it has to be entirely full color. And they said, okay. And it's an European publication. They don't use chapters, they use sections. So there are four sections in this book. And the sections essentially follow the development of my career from the first decades, the middle decades, and the end decades, including now. And then the fourth section is all about ILLI, the International Landscape Lighting Institute. And the reason that is so important is because the attendees, we don't call them students, we call them attendees, and the mentors that did mock-up after mock-up after mock-up after mock-up over almost 10 years on my property in New York, they did the same area over and over and over, and everyone was different. And it's so amazing to see them in this book. Sometimes there'll be three or four on a two-page spread. There'll be one, two, three, four, and you can see how different they are. And the cool thing about that is there are so many different ways that you can do good landscape lighting until you get to that line. You can't cross the line of glare and too much light and making people feel uncomfortable. So that chapter, or that section, excuse me, is just a critical part of the new book. The new book, called The Art of Landscape Lighting, as you said, came out last year, took 4 years. I essentially followed the same format of my thinking. And I in my office in New York, I used to have this huge long table that we called the aircraft landing table, because it was so long. And I would literally lay out every page of the book on that. And I only have the mini aircraft carrier here. So it takes me longer. I have to do it in smaller pieces. But I did the same thing. And luckily for me, in the meantime, I had met George Gruhl, who did the layout and most of the photography for the third edition of the landscape lighting book. He did the layout and most of the photography, except for the early years of my career, for the new book, The Art of Landscape Lighting. Thank God, because he just is so good, and he did such a good job.
Yeah. beautiful.
There's a little, if you look at the cover, there's a little, in tiny, tiny print, there's a little saying under my name that says something like "True Adventures in the World of Landscape Lighting." And somehow the publisher never took that out.
I see it. It's right. It's here. And you're exactly right. It doesn't say landscape lighting, but it says "True Adventures from the World of Lighting." And it's there.
It's there. So it isn't really true adventures. But as Melissa said, I share all of my projects and what I was trying to do, what I was trying to respond to that my clients wanted, and what the challenges were. And there are some big challenges in landscape lighting because, as we talked about earlier, you've got no walls, you've got no ceiling. And in Rio Verde, we've got javelina. And the javelina just charged right through. I did one project in Gunnison, Colorado, where we had this very distant view to this copse of trees, and the elk run through there. So, you know, some things can maybe withstand the javelina, but you've got to deal with the mess that the elk make.
Right, right.
Whew. So have I gotten through the first... the first part you want me to talk about, or should I talk more?
Yeah, no, you got to the second book, which is where we are, you know, kind of now, and the beauty and the visual of the second book in color, which makes sense that you have a different person publishing the book this time. That makes sense. Yeah, it's an amazing book, and it does tie everything together. You're from the beginning of your career all the way through. You mentioned Illy, and I want you to talk a little bit more about Illy, how that started, how you founded that, and what they're doing now.
It's a really long story, but I'll try and give you as much of it as I can. Illy started because the head of the continuing education department at UC Berkeley in landscape architecture wanted a class on landscape lighting. There was no class at UC Berkeley in either the main department or the continuing education department, which is true of most landscape architecture programs across the country still today. So back in the late 1980s, I started teaching a course. It was a semester-long course, and I'm teaching it, and I'm bringing in things to the class and showing, and I'm realizing you can't teach a class on landscape lighting in a classroom. We have to get out into the field. So I went up to my swimming club, the same place that I was swimming when I was doing my first book, and I asked them if we could please do a mock-up, if I could bring my class up and we could do a mock-up. And they kind of looked around and they said, okay. And so they let us do it. So that's how it started. And someone in New Jersey got wind of this and they said, well, can't you bring this to Rutgers? So I would teach one semester in California and one semester in New Jersey. And we weren't doing it outside yet in New Jersey. We were doing it on stage. So we'd just bring all these big trees in. And it was, in my opinion, it was just not good enough. So one year when I was in New Jersey, and it was in the fall, my very good friend Naomi Miller taught at RPI in the Lighting Research Center in Troy, New York. And she said, why don't you come visit when you're done teaching at Rutgers? So I did. And I'm flying over, and the fall colors are just so beautiful. I grew up in Connecticut and love, love, love the fall. So I was already kind of swooning. And then the director of the Lighting Research Center said, well, just put together a proposal, whatever you want to do. So I did. It was not going to be a semester long. It was going to be a continuing education course that the students at the Lighting Research Center could take, but it was really for practicing professionals. And it would be a week long. We would all get together on a Thursday night to talk about what we're going to do starting the next morning at 7:30 in the morning. And there would be a combination of lectures, demonstrations, like how to do a good wiring connection, and what lamps do and what all the fixtures do and how they work and what you should look for, all kinds of things, including we had Dr. David, we still do have Dr. David Breary, who is a doctor of ornithology, and he is our pruning advisor because pruning is so important in landscape lighting. So he gives a lecture, he does a demonstration, and he lights a tree before pruning and then prunes it to show you how it changes. It's so, and then the students get to, the attendees get to spend a lot of time, both day and night, out in the field doing a full-scale mock-up. We have literally over 20 rock and roll road cases for each team, full of everything you can imagine. And we tell the attendees on the first night, which is Friday night, to play, just play. Learn what the lamps do, play with fixtures, learn what they do. Don't start designing your project the first night. Wait till the next morning. Well, of course, everyone starts the first night. And after all these years, there's just no stopping them. So this class starts at 7:30 in the morning, as I said, and officially ends each night at 10:30. That's a long day for 5 days in a row. And I just came back from that. I got back Tuesday night. We finish on Tuesday. We do our public presentation to anyone that wants to come on Monday night, which we did, and it was just stunning in New Harmony, Indiana this year. I lost my train of thought. I got back from that. Oh, we just finished doing it. So, lost the train of thought. Mm. Oh, I know what it was. One of the groups on Sunday night did not finish until 1:30 in the morning. We don't make them stop. Class is officially over at 10:30, but we don't make them stop. So we call this course the intensive course. It's like boot camp. We're all exhausted. They're all exhausted when it's over. And that is what ILLI does. All we do is teach people about landscape lighting. It can be practicing professionals. We've had nurses. We've had pilots. We've had people that have worked with NASA. We've had all kinds of people that take this either personally, they want to work on their yard, mm-hmm. or because they want to know enough to know how to hire someone, which is what we do with our pruning part. We're not expecting everyone in this class to start doing pruning even, but they need to know how to talk to the arborist about what needs to be done. So this class goes on for 5 days and five nights, and it's called the intensive course. And right now it's the only course that ILLI teaches. And we have tried doing other courses. We've done permanent installation courses, which we only let mentors do. And I haven't talked about mentors. In the beginning, when we first started doing this, it started at RPI. I haven't even talked about that. And I realized relatively quickly that RPI was just really not the right place for it. So I started trying to do it on my own. And I realized that I needed a lot of help. So I started asking people that had taken the course to come and help me, which is how we came up with the idea of mentors. The first probably 5 to 6 years, we either didn't have any mentors. The first time we didn't have any mentors because it was just me and five people taking the course from Costa Rica, Dallas, Troy, and California. It was an interesting mix of people. And we did it in my house on my property. That's how informal it was. So as it was growing, we started realizing the mentors that were helping me start. And there was, at this point, there was probably about 10 mentors. And we all just kind of moved around and helped as much as we could. Nobody was getting through all the course material. So we decided to first assign one mentor. And then a few years later, we realized even one mentor doesn't work. So we assigned three mentors to each group permanently. There's a lead mentor, what we call the shadow, who helped the lead mentor make sure he was doing everything and following the course outline properly and getting everyone to the right places at the right time. And then we had what we called a rover. And the rover would just run to the garage and get more equipment and bring it back. Years later, we decided that's great, but what we need to do is get all the equipment out to the site, to each group's site, before they start working on it. So we've been doing that for years. So we keep learning all the things that we need to do to help make it easier for people to try to get through the course material.
Right.
And right now we have probably over 200 mentors from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And we can't use 200 mentors at every class, but listen to this. We started with 15 attendees, and we would have somewhere between 17 to 20 mentors. That's an interesting ratio. Now we have this class, we did 24 attendees, which means there's 8 people per group. That's a lot of people in one group. And I'll come back to that. And we have 17 mentors. So it's still a really good one-to-one ratio. And the great thing about ILLI is that everybody becomes really great friends. We're all competitors, but we're all really great friends, and everyone helps everyone with whatever they need. And our friendships are lifelong. And everyone in ILLI feels that way. Everyone talks about how next to their real family, ILLI is their family. And every person that takes the ILLI course says it changes their life. Every single person, still to this day. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
So we go through all this. One of the things that we're trying to teach people is how to do lighting. They have to do a conceptual plan and present it to their lead mentor and to the reviewers. The reviewers are some of the mentors that are not in their group, that are kind of looking over their shoulder to make sure they're not losing sight of what they learned in their interview on the first day when they interviewed the owner. Because we are not artists. We are designers. The art that we do is for our clients, not for us. So we all have to remember that going through this class, that we are doing this for someone else, and we may not even like it, but we have to be convinced that it's proper. So there's still that line. We can do it a million different ways till we get to that line. And it might not be the way that I would prefer, but that's irrelevant in this process. And that's a hard one for all of us to keep in mind. We're irrelevant, except for the knowledge that we're sharing, you know. Some of the other things that we want to make sure that people learn is working together, because every project that we do in the real world is a team, starting with either the architect, the interior designer, or the landscape architect, or all three of them, and then us and maybe other designers. I'm working on a project on Long Island right now with the interior lighting designers are an organization from Mexico. And we have to coordinate on what they're doing and what we're doing. And I've never had such good coordination. These guys are really amazing. We have to coordinate with the manufacturers, their representatives, their distributors, everybody. I think every single player is as important as the next. And that includes all the consultants. We have to work with the civil engineer. We have to work with the arborists. I mean, it just goes on and on. And that's hard for some people. And so we teach that in this course, partially by having your group be so big, requiring that your group coordinates with the other groups, because the lighting design across the site has to be completely cohesive. And on the one that we just finished this week in New Harmony, the project was the lighting of a chapel, a big, big chapel that has no roof. Because the woman that paid for this back in the 1950s felt that our relationship with God went all the way up into the sky, and we shouldn't have a barrier between us. Isn't that an interesting thought? So we worked on three groups. Each group had a third of the interior of the building and then everything around it. And of course, lighting never ends with the walls of a building, especially one that doesn't have a roof. And they were just on top of each other. So they really had to coordinate, and they did, I think, the best job that's ever been done. It's just stunning. And the photographs will be released through the ILLI website soon. They're working on making sure that they've got everything pulled together properly. We have three, photographers and videographers in the mentor team. Actually, one of them was one of the attendees. And then we hired ILLI hired a a professional videographer as well. So it'll all come out soon. And I highly recommend everybody go to Illy's website and look at it and all the other things that Illy has done. So that's still not the end. We then teach people how to present, because the culmination of the course is presenting to the public that knows nothing about what you're doing or why you've done it. Mm-hmm. And everyone's initial reaction to this is they want to look at the lighting. Well, that means you've got your back to the audience. So you can't do that. So we have to teach everyone, okay, you can't, yes, you can turn sideways so that you can still see it, you know, kind of like the weather people do on TV. But you've got to be looking at the audience and you've got to connect with the audience. And this group, they just did an amazing job. So Illy continues. There right now, Illy is doing two. Oh, and the reason I say Illy continues, you probably have no idea why I said that. I am no longer involved with Illy. I am just the founder. They are running the whole thing without me, and they're doing just an amazing job. They had me come back this time. I haven't been in 5 years to an Illy course. They had me come back this time because they really felt like the reviewers needed guidance. And I think it was really important that they did, because I start with the initial interviews and they weren't doing that. And how can you guide them if you don't understand or hear what the what went on between the designers and the owner in the initial interview? So the good news about it all is I sat in on some of the lectures. The lectures are all great. They've changed them. I used to give all the lectures myself. They've changed the lectures so that it's their lectures now, but they're still following the information, which is based on the landscape lighting book. The people that were with me to practice reviewing did just a fabulous job. So they don't need me. And as the one of the women, Catherine Toth, that's really involved in running this. It wouldn't happen without Catherine. She said to me after I said that to her, yeah, but need has nothing to do with this, which is very sweet. So Illy goes on. Right now they do two classes, one in the spring and one in the fall. And it's very difficult to figure out dates for doing classes because there are so many other events going on. Like right now, Urolucci's going on and Leducation just finished. The gardens are either dormant because the big trees have gone to sleep. They're deciduous and they've gone to sleep in the fall and they're just waking up. Luckily, some of the trees were just waking up. Some of them had no leaves still. And while I believe that if you light a dormant tree perfectly, then it's going to be great when it has leaves, but it's prettier, it's showier when it has its leaves. So everyone wants either fall color leaves or spring leaves. So we can't go too far into the spring because we'll start stomping on all the plants that are coming up out of the ground. And we can't go either too late into the fall or too late into the spring because of the time change. We need darkness. Even though we work till 10:30, right now it wasn't getting dark in New Harmony until almost 8 o'clock. And that's just not much time in the dark. And we're doing this because of dark. We want to help people feel more connected with the night. Whew. Is that enough about Illy? Did I forget anything you want to know about Illy?
Well, there are a lot of other things you want to know about Illy. Go ahead, Shelley.
Illy's done in person, right? Like literally you sign up for it, you go there. This is not a virtual.
No, it
I
can't
want to be sure. I didn't think yeah. it could be, but yeah. you know, everything has a virtual way these days. So I just wanted to be sure.
Exactly. And the reason that you can't do it, it's I compare it to trying to learn to paddle a canoe.
Right.
You can do all the virtual stuff and learn the technique of the paddling, but until you get into a canoe and start paddling, you don't know how to paddle a canoe. And landscape lighting is the same. You've got to be out there working with the lights in the dark with whatever materials it is that you're trying to light.
Wow.
And Illy is in a different place each time. It sounds like there's different locations across the, maybe across the world, but definitely across the United States.
Yes. It used to be all centered on my property in New York until I moved from New York to Arizona. So we did it for many, many years, as I said earlier. Now there is no real home. There's no brick and mortar office, even. It's everyone working on the internet together. And there's a ton of them, and they do just an amazing job, literally all over the world. We just did, and this is the weirdest thing, but it worked. We did a virtual course with people in Thailand. And then they went out and worked with our mentor who's in Thailand and did mock-ups without us. But we did some of the lectures from the United States with the Thai. So we were doing it at, we started at, I think mine started at 10 o'clock at night. And there were three. The last one started, I think it was 1 o'clock in the morning, our time. But it was late morning, early afternoon for them, getting ready for darkness. But so right now it's all in the United States. We're really trying to be able to do some overseas. I have done some personally overseas. I've done some in Sweden, in Australia, in Canada, in various places, but not officially an ILLI course. We are hoping to do that, but we do have mentors from all over the world that participate and can help us lead things in different parts of the world and organize them in different parts of the world. And what there was more to say about that. Oh, so right now in the United States, this one was in New Harmony, Indiana. Last fall, it was in New Harmony, Indiana. We all love doing it in New Harmony, Indiana. It's such a beautiful setting. And the conference facilities are right there on site. So you don't have to get on a bus to go to your hotel. So it makes it much easier. This fall, it will be in Texas at a site that we've done previously and does involve buses. And the ILLI board is considering other places. I think maybe some in the South and other locations, but they don't have it all worked out. So even I don't know where those other locations will be in the future. And we're just hoping that ILLI can keep growing and that we can keep expanding and do more than two of this course a year. These are significant courses. They are exhausting. And so I don't know how much more we can do than two a year, but we can do other courses that are special courses or special topic courses.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Go ahead, Shelly, you were going to ask.
No, I was just wondering, because you say that there are different areas. You like New Harmony a lot. So I was just curious in your career, is there a certain area of the world that you prefer? Like, vegetation is different everywhere. Is there one that you like really, really love working with, or you like them all for their different challenges? Because I know that trees can be different in different areas.
Well, before I answer that question, let me tell you that while a specific tree can be different from the trees that are in another area, they all follow the same kind of guidelines. Sorry about this. I will turn her off. So in the landscape lighting book, I've categorized all the types of plants into shapes, and it doesn't matter where in the world you are, all the shapes work. Having said that, my favorite place, and you'll be surprised, I'm sure, Arizona. I am so connected to the plants here. They're so beautiful. And the Sonoran Desert is so beautiful. We have things blooming here in the Sonoran Desert all year.
Okay.
It's amazing. It's so beautiful. We have beautiful trees. And then the cactus. There's just nothing better than cactus. And right now, April, the cactus start blooming. Well, there's cactus that are blooming all year, but you really start noticing the bloom in the midwinter when the aloes start blooming. And then other things take over. Pretty soon the saguaros will be blooming and the opuntias are starting. And there's just nothing better than blooms in the desert. And all the wildflowers are blooming right now. Huge swaths of Mexican poppies. Oh, it's just in the wild. It's just gorgeous. So it's the desert. This, not just any desert, this desert, which is why I live here.
Okay. Yeah. You've lived in a few different locations and you've traveled all over the world. So you definitely have agency about what is your favorite. You can.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why you ended up there. So there's also, and there's so much more we want to ask you about ILLI. So you may be a long-standing guest of ours, because there's so much there to go through. You have another course that you started through IES, and that is an online course.
Yep.
Tell us about that. I was looking at the website, but can you?
It's a cool course. It's called Learn Nightlight, Observe, Design, Refine. It's wonderful. And I didn't start it with IES. We are distributing it through the IES, so they're a partner. But it's actually Michelle Mueller from Garden Light LED who came up with the idea and convinced me. And she didn't have to hold a gun to my head like the little voice did on the books. I thought with the books and Illy, if I could have an online course, I would have the whole circle of my education that we need to get out of my head before it's too late. I'm getting old. We need to get it out before it's too late. So it started, we did the first 10 courses, and that's been online through the IES for at least a year, if not longer. And then we finished the last 10. So there's a total of 20 online courses that cover everything from A to Z. Michelle is just amazing. In order for you to get CEUs, you know, you have to have an exam. So there's a full binder of everything I say, all the imagery that you can download when you take the course. You have everything. And then you have to take the exams. And when you finish the exams, then you get your continuing education units.
Right.
So it's a really great thing to do, and you can get years worth. I don't mean a year, I mean years worth of CEUs by taking this course, as you can with Illy. Illy gives you, I think it's, I don't remember, it's somewhere between 30 and 40 CEUs.
Oh,
really?
Yeah. Okay. And I may be wrong, but it's a lot. It's a lot. I'm kind of not part of it so much anymore, so I don't have all the details. And as I said, I'm getting old.
Well, yes. Well, you say you're getting old. You actually look so. You look the same as you did when I saw you. I don't know, 25 years ago. So you look great. But it sounds like you said you're not doing Illy, but you just went to Illy. What are you up to right now? Since you've sort of distanced yourself from Illy in one sense, even though you return, and the course, it sounds like you're doing, but what are you up to these days?
Part of the reason that I left Illy is it's just so much work. And quite frankly, my doctors told me I had to reduce my stress. I'm getting old and I just can't do it anymore. And poor Catherine understands that because it's a lot of work. And it's not just Catherine, you know, everybody on the board is very involved. So what I'm doing right now is, besides being on the committee at Rio Verde about our street lighting, I do help Rio Verde with a lot of lighting issues. And I have since I first moved here. And I'm doing a lot of helping my neighbors with their lighting, but I'm still doing lighting design across the country. I'm trying to keep it within the United States because I really don't want to travel overseas anymore. So I'm very, very busy. I hope I'm done writing books, and I hope I'm done with online courses. And Illy can, it's going on its own. So I'm a very proud mom about how Illy's doing. So I'm just busy. And I have to tell you, the most important thing is taking care of my family and my Salukis. My husband and I have three Salukis, mm-hmm. and they're our kids. And so I get to spend more time with my kids now.
That's very nice. I saw in the sort of the video montage that George did, the Salukis at the end of the video, he has some pictures of them. So that's lovely. We all, yep. I think, need in this world some time to wind down, and we all have all three of us have our fur babies. I have a real baby too, who's 23, but we all have our children at home, and I think that's really important. They're sort of our connection to other things than the people and the noise of the world,
and we can learn so much about life from them.
Yes. Oh. Yes. Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. So we just kind of scratched the surface with you today. And your stories are so interesting. And we're going to have you back again for part two, where we want to pick your brain a lot, actually, about landscape lighting and what drew you to that. We can talk about in the next the next section of our meeting. And also because of its change, the ways it's changed so much through LED, kind of what, how you chose the Kelvin temperature that you chose, that you use, and some of the do's and don'ts and some of the absolutes and some of your essentials for lighting and how you've been lighting over the past 40 years. We're going to also show some pictures from your new book, and you can talk about maybe a couple of projects that were particularly challenging or interesting to you, because I know you and I have talked about Abu Dhabi and how that evolved and how that happened. And I also, as I want to hear a little bit more about what we do, your mentors and what and how they helped you, and you as a mentor, and how you help your mentees, I don't know, with their processes. And there's just so much there. So I think we'll end today. We've been chatting for a while, and there's a lot here. And then we'll join you next time for the rest of this process. So we can pick your brain some more.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Jan, for joining us and for doing this. And your time is precious, and we appreciate you coming on and indulging us and giving us all this information.
Thank you for sharing information about lighting with the world. It's really important.
It is really important. Yeah, that's part of our mission. So thank you so much for participating, and we're going to see you again very soon.
So, thank you,
thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.